Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for listening this morning. We do appreciate your time and your ears joining us here on the radio. We'll ask you to hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. Following that, we'll accept those calls at 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest. Let me see. Just one quick note here. Last Thursday, we had a caller who delved into some questionable language that will not be tolerated here at KAJO Radio. And just for your edification, our standards are even higher than the FCC's here. But we encourage spirited talk and diverging viewpoints here. That's what it's all about. In the meantime, I want to welcome our guest today. So far in studio, and maybe expecting one more, we have Mayor Clint Scherff and City Councilor, who we got tackled as we brought in today, Rick Riker. We didn't expect to see you today, Rick.
Well, the calendar had my name on it, but maybe I read the wrong one.
No. I think we have a third one. We have President of the Council, I think, coming in right now. That'll be Victoria. Come on through the door. Victoria Marshall about to join us. And Mayor Clint Scherff here. So we'll have a full slate here. Not quite a quorum.
Not quite a quorum.
All right.
No, but we appreciate everybody being involved, so that's all good. The more the merrier.
All right. And let's see as Victoria takes her seat here. We have a full counter today. It's not often I have all three spaces filled here, but we certainly appreciate that. And to all of you, Mr. Mayor, let's start with you here because we know that there's lots in front of the City Council right now, in particular with the homeless situation. And where do we stand right now? What lies just ahead?
This Wednesday we're going to shore up our codes a little bit in regards to the camping and some other aspects in regards to that. What that does is it shores up our codes to be more aligned with some of the parameters of the temporary injunction that's in place. We also have a number of temporary resting sites that are in place at this moment in time. The employee parking area that was taken over and transitioned into a temporary resting area should be open very shortly, if not today. It took a little bit of time to prep it and get it ready, but it is on the precipice of opening up. And then our goal is basically to, you know, without divulging too much, it's really hard, and I know the public really wants to know a lot more, but it's really hard for me to go out into public venue and just vomit up all this information because you don't know what's going to happen in the judicial area of this, and we have opposing counsel that's very hawkish and watching everything that we say in public, and you just never know when that one slight word out of touch is could be used against us in this lawsuit. So we are a little bit more cautious when we talk in the public venture. But yeah, hopefully we'll be back in front of that judge, as soon as the end of this week, if not next week, presenting all the stuff that the city has done to accommodate what the judge's ruling was.
Okay. We know that the judge initially said you needed more spaces and they need to be ADA compliant. And with the addition of these two new sites here all around the corner of 4th and A Streets right now, seems to comply with that.
Correct.
All right. Was that the idea behind it? And I'm a little confused about how long it took. Basically, all we needed to do was put up a fence, wasn't it?
Well, they wanted to prep the area to make sure that it was a little bit more fire safe in regards to, you know, we have people that are going to be resting there. We have avid smokers. We have, you know, we just want to make sure we're coming in the a little bit hotter season. So we want to make sure that site was very protective for the people that would be using it as well as for the community around it. At government pace, I apologize, but government pace is a little tiny bit slower than private sector pace.
The government gate, okay, yeah. as we speak. Victoria, welcome to the microphones of KAJO. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, move that move into that a little bit closer here. If I need to adjust it, if you want to take those headphones off, it might just step into the side there so we don't get any feedback there. Thank you very much. From your perspective, are we ready to go back in front of that judge?
I I do believe so. I know council worked very hard to make sure that all the that everything the judge asked us for was taken care of, and we took it very seriously. And for the health of the public and the protection of the public, we did what we needed to do to keep our city safe. And so I have really, I do believe that we will, as Mayor said, we can't guess what will happen in a court, but we do know that we did everything that we could do to ensure that we met the parameters of what the judges asked us to do in the ruling.
All right. Rick, you weigh in on this. You agree with everything that's been said so far?
Yes, I do. I think the mayor and Victoria have said adequately what we're facing, yes.
Okay. Are there any opposing opinions out there that we need to hear about that you're aware of?
There is a lot of opposing opinions. depending on how long you've lived in Grants Pass, you know that there are very vocal opinions in Grants Pass on all sides. One of the answers I have for anybody that has questions in regards to this is we've been doing our research. We've been in front of legal counsel. We've been in front of our supporting legal counsel. We've been in front of other legal counsel. You know, I've taken upon myself to educate myself as much as possible about this so I could help direct counsel in the right direction so we can actually protect us from the current lawsuit and then go forth and protect us from future lawsuits. What it boils down to is the current lawsuit is arguing House Bill 3115. Every lawyer that I've talked to basically says there's no precedence. We're the first ones to the table. So it's really, really hard to answer these questions and say, yes, there's a definite answer to the question you just asked. There isn't. Even all the lawyers that are looking into this say the same exact thing. Normally they've got precedence in the court system that goes back many, many years because that same litigation has been done over and over and over. This litigation has never been done before. So we are the test subject.
We're the test subject.
Yep, yep. And so it's really hard to give those solid answers to the public when they ask. And I apologize if it makes it sound like we're being a little like not being as transparent as people think. But realistically, it's like we don't have the answers and our lawyers don't even have the answers. So we're all kind of going at this the best we possibly can. As well as, you know, I want to make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can in the right manner, in the right way.
All right. Let me ask a couple of questions here. And I'm just going to throw this out to our entire panel here, all three of you. On Wednesday night, you're going to adjust the code for camping in these areas. Basically, from what I saw, you're shortening the footprint or you're decreasing the footprint that a camper can have within these parks. Is that to make to get to the 150 people that the judge?
No, it's not. Alien. It's not to get to that number. It mm-hmm. really wasn't to get to that number. In the judge's ruling for the temporary injunction, her request did not include language within our code, but we thought it we thought it more advantageous for us to make sure that our code was solid, there was no ambiguity in it, and so forth. In regards to shrinking up the footprint, basically we put it into a more manageable footprint. So what it does is it brings the footprint down to 2-3-4 man tents and excludes the large resort style mansion tents because they do take up a lot of space. But yeah, it wasn't driven by the number that the judge had put forth in the temporary injunction. No, it was not.
And as I understand, we're going to declare an emergency in order to get this done quickly. Is that fair happening on Wednesday night?
You know, that one, I do apologize. The last, yesterday's workshop, I actually called out sick because my head was swimming from these allergies and I couldn't talk very much.
I've never heard that except from everybody here at the radio station. Pollen is incredible right now.
So I'm going to deflect to one of the council members that actually attended the workshop tomorrow or yesterday.
Yeah, Victoria. The word we got was that you're declaring an emergency in order to move quickly on this and get it done almost immediately. Is that fair?
Well, I think you may be talking about two different issues when you say that. I think as far as the change in the code goes, I think we're just following normal procedure for how we go about changing. We brought it up at the workshop, and then we will go quickly at our meeting on Wednesday night. But I don't know as though so Rick wants to add about
Rick,
the emergency.
Rick over here is
so,
chomping at the
yes,
bit again.
Yes, he is, so let's let him. Yeah.
I asked that question yesterday because I was concerned that normally the procedure when you adopt an ordinance, it's 90 days. And Stephanie, our city attorney, said that we have the ability to declare an emergency, which would then put it in effect immediately. And the consequence of that, it really would assist us in the lawsuit addressing the timelines for that.
Because let's try to explain that. Let me start here, and you correct me if I'm wrong with an ordinance that we're talking about here. If it goes through the first vote and it's unanimous, then you can immediately call for a second vote. Is that fair?
That's correct.
And if that's unanimous, then it passes. Then normally it's 90 days. But in this case, we've declared an emergency to make it effective immediately. Is that accurate?
We have to declare an emergency. The thing is, I'm not sure if that's written in our motion, but we have the ability to do that, yes.
All right. Are there parameters for declaring an emergency?
A motion.
Okay. And Victoria, is there a reason for declaring an emergency? Are there parameters for declaring an emergency for the council? You or the mayor, either one.
Well, we absolutely need to make sure that this takes place as quickly as possible so that we have everything lined up with regards to our temporary resting sites and with the rules in the park. There was some change to the language. There were two sections that needed to be condensed, so things like that. So they're all related, and the way that you're asking us about it is accurate, but it to help us to make sure that we can use it to our ability with the lawsuit, then the emergency can be declared to make sure it's not 90 days. So, yes.
Yeah, just to sum that up, basically an ordinance resolution takes 30 days to enact.
Mm-hmm.
We feel at the behest of the community and the behest of the safety of the people that we are accommodating in these resting areas, that we want this done quickly and expediently. So, yes, that's the procedure that we are going to go forward with to make sure that these ordinances would be able to be enacted very, very quickly.
Now, the ordinance that we're talking about also contains an ordinance against any camping in any city park. Is that accurate?
It's in public spaces, yes.
In public spaces, and that includes all city parks. Other areas?
Well, basically, that would also include like sidewalks and so forth.
Downtown.
Because realistically, the public sometimes doesn't understand that when you're standing next to a road, that the right of way of that road, the
extends.
Ownership of the road, mm-hmm. extends. It doesn't just go up to the back of your curb. It actually goes into your sidewalk and in the downtown area, it goes to the faces of the buildings. So if you have an inset entrance to your building, like some on G Street, then that little cove is owned by the owner. But everything from the face windows out to the street is owned by, 6th Street is actually ODOT, so, but most of it is owned by city. So, yeah, so it kind of, the ordinance, again, clarification, pinpoint accuracy in it to make sure that all these things are defined.
All right. Now, with these new additions to camping areas, is that enough right now to house the population that we're talking about? Do we have numbers?
There's one of those questions we were talking about earlier. It's really hard to answer that. Currently, the temporary injunction stated 150 tents, 150 tent areas. So that is a number that we're working with at this moment in time. When it goes all the way up to the state level in regards to HB 3115, the actual state ordinance, I don't know. I don't think it's even defined in that state ordinance. So that's where there's a lot of pushback in Salem at this moment in time is trying to get in this legislative session. They tried to get some more clarification. There's some representatives that put a bill forth in this legislative terms, and it wasn't to repeal 3115. It was actually just to define it further, so people could really, so citizens, so communities could actually figure out, you know, what they needed to abide by.
Remove those general terms and make them more specific so we know what we're dealing with.
There's yes, and the people that that support the 3115 wouldn't even allow it to go to the floor. So now we're stuck for another 6 months until the next legislative session to even get a further definition on that House bill.
All right, Victoria, I saw you nodding your head a moment ago. Do you want to weigh in here further?
Oh no, I think Mayor explained that very well. I was just nodding in agreement.
Thank you.
All right. Now, putting all these people in this particular spot, right next to City Hall, right next to a residential area, I'm certain there's been some pushback. I know from some citizens, and I understand that the chief of police was less than thrilled with the situation. Is that accurate?
Yes. In the discussion, Chief Hensman did weigh in and said that his explanation is very common sense and sensible. The more people that you combine in a smaller area, the more friction. More friction. It's simple physics. You got more friction. The argument with, I don't even want to call argument. Basically, I believe the premise in regards to why Rob Pell started to nominate the city employee parking lot was because his defense was, we would rather have them closer to the police department so everybody could, you know, be safer, themselves included. And it was felt the path of least resistance would be to put another temporary resting site closer to the city building, closer to this police, and not go further out into a new community and blight that community. So realistically, there was a lot of good grounds for that recommendation, and I believe the rest of the council got on board with that, and that was their reasoning. So it wasn't necessarily. I kind of have to take a little pushback on you on that one with Chief Hensman's reservations. He explained himself very good, and it was really based around the number of people putting in one spot could do that. But he is in agreement that it'll be a little bit better because they can monitor it because it's right next door to them.
And he doesn't feel like he's outnumbered there?
Our police is always outnumbered at this moment in time. We have the best police force I could ever ask for this community. They're overworked. We know that. We do have we're going into the budget season now, so we're going to really find out. But it's been rumored that we do have budget for more police officers. We've been advertising for many, many months, if not up over a year. The problem we have is, I think people see what's happening here in Grants Pass, and they look at that like, do I want to come and do all that work?
That's another topic that we want to get into, and we will here momentarily, but I got two other counselors here raising their hands. Rick, you were up first.
Well, I agree that the site that's been chosen next to the City Hall that's already paved has a lot of advantages because it is paved. It's already ready available for the ADA issues, and also the aspect it is next to existing site, next to police station. And when it came to a vote, the majority of the vote was in favor of that, but I was one of the negative votes that I was supporting Chief Hensman that we should have a different location.
All right. Now, Victoria, you had your hand up there, too.
Oh, I did. I just wanted to add that these are actually two separate sites. They are separated by fencing and temporary barriers. So that does help in making sure it's not one very big site, but it's two sites next to one another. And so I just wanted to add that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. The talk has been going fast and furious so far today. We need to take just a little time out. We'll be right back.
Right now at U.S. Cellular, you can...
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. City Council is in session today. Well, we don't have a quorum here.
Yeah, be careful.
No quorum here.
No quorum. We do have the mayor, the president of the council, and Councilor Rick Riker, along with Victoria Marshall and Clint Scherf. And we've also had some input, I understand, from the city manager. Did we get everything right? Are we close?
Yeah. Aaron, the city manager, is just he has a direct line to me, so he was just texting me clarification. Yeah, absolutely. We're still on target. We're still on. We haven't presented anything that was false or wrong. So yeah. Basically, what it comes down to is Wednesday we are doing a resolution for the resting sites. We are doing an ordinance change. So realistically, as we were just discussing off air, is ordinance. takes a long time if you're implementing a new rule or regulation, or if you're changing the comprehensive plan, which is like basically the master plan. Since we're only shoring up language and we're actually just clarifying some things within an ordinance that's already in place, then basically we felt putting those two together in a rush situation was most beneficial to the community and the council.
All right. Now, let's deal with the situation at hand. That's the court injunction and the lawsuit. And basically, those are two different things. We can get by the injunction, but the suit remains. What's the city's position right now? Once we get these ordinances passed and these resting areas open, hopefully the injunction will go away. But the council still is faced with this lawsuit. And what is the strategy there? Where do we stand with that situation?
You know, and I'm going to apologize up front. I don't think we have that answer at this moment in time. I think there's counselors that have a premise on what they want to do. It hasn't really been too much a discussion of topic with our legal counsel because we've been hyper-focused on getting out from underneath this as soon as quickly as possible. So I believe, you know, I'm not going to speak for all the council, but I believe that I've been hyper-focused on the one topic of it. And we haven't really gotten into in-depth conversations with our legal counsel in regards to our next step, which I believe we will get into those in-depth conversations once we cross our fingers, hopefully get out from underneath the temporary injunction. So I apologize, I can't answer that question at this moment in time.
All right, Victoria, it looked like you had an answer there. At least you were excited for a moment.
Well, the injunction and the lawsuit are related in that the injunction was the answer from the judge stating that Disability Rights Oregon had a point, so to speak, and but we have met that point. So both of the injunction and the lawsuit, and I can't say for sure, but I think there is some belief that the two are tied, and that we are answering both of them at the same time. Although I cannot say, and we can't answer for sure at this time, because we can't know what will happen in a court of law.
All right, Rick, did you want to weigh in on this one here? Everybody gets a chance. You can't shake your head. It's radio.
Yeah. I weigh in. I like the comments that they made.
Okay, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Obviously, we have two members of the City Council and the mayor in studio today, and we thank all of them for their time and you for yours. And we ask you to stay right there because we need to take another little break. We'll be right back following news. And don't forget, the number to call after the news if you have a question or comment for our guest or a suggestion or two, it's 541-472-1270.
Hey there, it's Nathan.
Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen, City Council. Well, what we have here is Mayor Clint Scherf, City Council President Victoria Marshall, and I want to say Senior Counselor Rick Riker is here with us today. So we have a full house today, not quite a quorum here, thank goodness. But in the meantime, if you have a question or comment for our guest, it's 541-472-1270. We've been talking, of course, about the homeless situation, and a lot of that's going to be dealt with this Wednesday night during the council's business session. Now, that brings up just a couple of questions. First of all, every time we're talking about these resting sites, the word temporary is put in front of them. So how temporary are they? Do we have other sites? And I know we've been looking for other sites for a long time. Are there any sites out there? What are we looking at? How temporary is temporary?
Yes. When we're dealing with this in a legal manner, I think in life, words matter. Words absolutely matter. So, yes, we try to distinguish that these are temporary resting sites. They were put in place to help in the beginning get people out of the park so the parks could go back to the community and we'd have a little bit more of a safe haven for our children and our families to visit the parks. Yes, they are temporary. They're labeled temporary. That is one of those good questions that we necessarily can't answer 100%. I believe council is focusing on trying to put something together that might be a little more of a long-term solution. If you've seen, council's been discussing numbers of properties that are a little bit larger in scale to put something in place for the future. I don't think we've even settled on pieces of property yet. We're still in that negotiation style, research style. So we don't have any definite answers, but we are trying to work on something that would be a little bit more of a long-term solution and maybe protect us from future lawsuits and get our community back in a safer nature than it is today.
All right. Further comment, Victoria or Rick, either one?
No.
They're looking...
Well, I will add that at yesterday, because it was public, it was at yesterday's workshop, there was direction council gave to our city manager to put together a public forum, dates that were put forward. Again, it's public. It was yesterday. Were the 19th, the 22nd, and the 22nd. One of those dates... things can change, but this is the direction we gave to our city manager to have a listening session for the public with regards to what those future plans are. We have had an organization, Pathways for Stability, and Stepping Stones Navigation Center present to us several times, and they have a good model. They have a very good model in order to not have a temporary site that is not an open site like the ones that we have now, but to help people move to the next step and out of homelessness entirely and out of drug addiction entirely. And I think that the council, by and large, is very open into looking that direction, because it's something that the community needs, and it really checks off a lot of boxes for the needs of our community. Safety, really, for me, absolutely is the number one issue with that. And solvency, to solve the problem, is the second most important checkbox for me. And I don't know if Rick has anything to add to that, but that's just some things looking into the future, really important and very good things looking ahead.
All right. Shake your head so we can hear you.
Well, I think the council wants to move forward finding a solution. We're looking at different properties, which, of course, we can't disclose, which they are, and hope to come up with a solution. The sooner the better. We need a solution. We need direction, and not to just kick the can down the road.
Are these city-owned properties, or are there properties that we're looking to purchase here?
There's a gamut of them. So basically, we do have, like Rick said, we're looking at properties in plural. So there is, you know, to meet some of the parameters that might help us establish a little bit larger of a place to accommodate more than a small resting site. There's a limited number of spaces that are available in the city. So all I can really answer that question is we're looking at a number of properties, plural. So, and I just want to preface the comments today is in regards to this topic is the council is in research and reviewing mode and has made no decisions yet. We have direction on a direction that we are trying to go. But again, there's a lot of questions we can't answer because we don't have all the answers for what our solution could be, what we quote-unquote we want to call a solution that you really can't say it's a formal solution, but it's an idea to help us and help our community. Again, I apologize, it's still in that idea stage and nobody's really made a lot of decisions just yet, but we are going in a positive direction trying to get something in place for our community.
Now, Rick's jumping at the bit again.
So part of the challenges that we have, one, is the property available? And then if it's available, is it available for lease or price? What is on the current on the property? Does the property have characteristics that address handicapped or don't address handicapped? And, you know, as you look at any piece of property, are there hazards there, no hazards? If there's a structure on it, does the structure meet the building code requirements for habitation with people instead of just machines? So there's a lot of criteria we need to address in evaluating any site we look at.
Are funds set aside for acquiring property right now, or at least for leasing or any way acquiring it? What are we talking about money-wise for the citizens?
So at this point in time, the city really hasn't set aside funds for any of this stuff dealing with the homeless. This is coming directly out of general fund to support the temporary sites that are out there right now. They pretty much are not defined. These resting sites are not defined in the law, HB 3115, but they are basically predicated from the litigation about around that law. So at this moment in time, you've got fencing, you've got public space that is, if it's city owned, it's not generating taxpayer dollars for a property tax. There's toilets that have to be provided, water stations that have to be provided, dumpsters that have to be provided. That all comes at a cost because people don't donate that for free. So currently we do have a monetary value to those resting sites that has never been allocated, you know. So in order to go forward with some sort of a plan of attack to help mitigate future lawsuits, the council is they scrutinize everything that gets in front of them. I mean, these eight people are hawkish. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what dollars they have available to them because they're taxpayer dollars. Whether from a federal level or from a local level, they're still coming out of taxpayer pockets.
Do we have a general number on how much we've spent since the first of the year?
We do have those numbers. I don't have that right on the top of my head. We could provide that to public anytime they ask. But yeah, I think we have those numbers. I just don't have them on the tip of my tongue.
Okay, Rick or Victoria, either one, know a number right off the top of your head. All right, let me ask another further question here, because we keep talking about our attorneys going into this lawsuit here, and that is not our city attorney. Are these outside attorneys, and how much are we paying them? How much is this really costing us? Do we have any idea of that yet?
So we are part of a League of Oregon Cities, which is basically offers cities I'm not the expert on this. This is kind of how explained to me is there's an insurance program that goes through this League of Oregon Cities, and the city buys into that insurance program. The previous lawsuit that came in 2017-2018. Was generated by the Oregon Law Center, and our defense lawyer came from this city insurance program through League of Oregon Cities. The same process came through on this second lawsuit that was put forth against us from the Oregon Law Center. And again, we have actually the same exact attorney that we had on the previous lawsuit. So yes, it is through an insurance program that the city has. I believe it's really a norm for cities within smaller cities and medium-sized cities within the whole state of Oregon.
Fascinating topic here. I want to thank you all very much, but there's some other things to Rick, jump in here.
I just wanted to say, because of the Supreme Court, we've become the poster child. And the state of Oregon realizes that this impact will impact the entire state of Oregon, and that's why they are willing to take it on and defend us.
Likely up and down the West Coast also, and maybe nationwide?
Yes, and that's why
I can buy into that. Yeah.
That's why amicus briefs have been filed by other states to join us in the original lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move ahead now. Because we just dealt with that just on another topic here that we talked about earlier when we talked about funding police. And we've looked at the budget. We're in the budget process now, as I understand it, or should be very, very soon. And we're looking at maybe enhancing our police department. What's the status there?
So we don't have that specific answer for you because, like you said, we are going into budget season. I believe it's the end of the month here. We have some preliminary ideas on what we want to do. It went through strategic planning that would be one of our top priority focuses. Again, our previous council had the same to focus on coming up with a more permanent revenue stream for police and fire. It's public knowledge that 99% of your property taxes go towards public safety, which is fire and police. When you have technology expanding, you have life expanding, you have everything expanding, the costs expand, and they've outpaced so basically it comes down to police spending, fire spending outpaces the increase in property taxes. So there is a shortcoming. That shortcoming has been shored up with general funds. And so there was the levy that was passed. It wasn't significant enough to take up that shortfall, so it is still drawing down on the general fund. Part of strategic planning, again, a previous council did it. We're doing the same thing. Is that's high priority to figure out what a new source revenue would be to be a more permanent, more solid source revenue for that.
So no hard numbers yet are available.
No, and I apologize. We haven't even, that the budget hasn't even been presented to council yet. We're going to go into that those sessions very shortly here, and then we could have specific numbers for you. So we could only cite what happened last year.
Okay. Next subject, which we just broached. Strategic planning has finally taken place here a little later in the year. And Victoria, you want to jump in on this one, don't you?
Yeah, and it's actually related to your last question. The four parameters for strategic planning are dealing with the homelessness situation and funding fire and police, promoting business, and financial opportunity for the city. So those are the four areas in strategic planning. We gave them titles that I may not have given the exact proper ones to get back to you right now, but those are the four areas. So we are dedicated to making sure that our fire and police are funded, and it is literally written into our strategic plan is what I wanted to add.
All right. Those are four general topics. Thank you very much. Any specifics come out of that we need to know about?
No.
Everybody's pointing at everybody else here.
It was a very, in my case, it was a little bit daunting because it's a lot of information download at one time. What I got out of strategic planning was basically this, the council as a whole will be dedicated to shoring up police funding, will be dedicated to coming up with something to alleviate communities' concerns in regards to the homeless population in our town. We'll also be focusing on business retention, business growth, and even one of my personal passions is to start pushing outreach programs to actually entice businesses to come from outside of our community to reestablish here. I grew up here back in the 80s. There was lumber. There was timber, there was mills, there was ranchers, there was farmers, there was business owners, and then we had the hippies. So we all worked together. We all had a great time. Spotted owl came through in the mid-80s, late-80s, and that killed our lumber industry. So we still have industrial site areas that were dedicated to lumber and mills that have been vacant since then. So I want to make it a personal goal of mine and help push the council as well to actually reach out past our community bounds to try to get manufacturing style jobs in here. We have the industrial space for them. It poses another problem was, do we have enough houses to house the workers?
You keep taking away my next question.
Yeah. So it is, if when you look at it, the city tackles so many prongs that come to the center of the wagon wheel. And so basically we're not just focused on one thing. The sad truth of the matter is have been focused on one topic for so long that it would be nice to get that to be not the topic of the day so we can actually do some good for this community and get some better jobs for these people and, you know, basically just make our community thrive and prosper.
Right. You've already mentioned the things that are in the way right now, the homeless situation, the housing situation. What can be done other than just make those two situations go away? You're talking about outreach. How are we reaching out and where are we reaching out to? And are there other situations that stop that outreach from being successful?
So the outreach is the idea, and it's going to basically be something that we're going to work on. So current partners that we work with in regards to business and economic growth, they have been hyper-focused on retention and keeping the current businesses growing and prospering. So, yeah, my idea to them is, hey, outside of the box thinking, let's start reaching out past the parameters. So how we do that hasn't been solidified yet, but that'll be the kind of the goal is trying to figure out how to do some further outreach. Bringing that back full circle is your economy has multi-feeders into it. Housing is one of them. So I do give props to the previous council. They worked for a number of years in regards to incentivizing low-income housing. We have a bunch of projects slated coming up for construction We have a dedicated veterans area or community that's going to be built. Gospel Rescue Mission's working on a dedicated community just for seniors. So there's a lot of facets that have already been put in place for the low-income housing. So I believe we need to take a step back and start looking at middle-income and workforce housing. Because you get a manufacturing group in here, they need 250 workers. They don't need low-income housing. They just need a good, solid home, workforce housing. And some of those, so if you have manufacturing come in and they take up an undeveloped industrial property and they've got to develop it, how many workers, how many construction workers do they need in a temporary manner? So workforce housing will be one thing that I'm going to try to push the council to be working on. So I believe we haven't solved low-income housing, but we've put enough in place that's coming up in the near future. I think that'll shore us up a little bit. Let's work on the middle income workforce housing. And then now our community is more enticing for an outside business manufacturing group to come in and solidify and put some footprint down here.
All right, Victoria, how hard does he have to push the council?
Oh, I think we're all, I think the council will be wanting to move in the same direction on the housing front. One thing I wanted to add about what are we doing for economic opportunity? Well, just yesterday in our workshop, we had some of our partners come. It was Visit Grants Pass, and part of one of their partners is Main Street Grants Pass, and there are others, the Chamber of Commerce. So one of the areas that our city has focused on in the past, and we will want to make sure we focus on right now too and expand, is advertising Grants Pass as a tourism destination. And so we had a wonderful presentation yesterday that really gave us the numbers that show us the dollars we put into advertising for tourism are coming back huge. I don't have those numbers right in front of me, but it was like 1 to 1,000 or something like that. So it was really, so that is definitely something that our city has been doing well and will continue to expand on. Is the tourism aspect, because Grants Pass is a wonderful destination.
All right, Rick, tourism, housing, weigh in on those.
Well, yesterday at the workshop, we had one piece of property in Baker Park that a building there is being surplus property, and the city council had a presentation and discussed what we should be doing with it. And we ended up saying that, yes, we should put it on the market for additional housing. One idea is to do a lot line adjustment to make the property a little bit larger so it makes it more attractive to somebody, but also to stick with the perspective that the property would be used by a developer for housing but not have the obligation that they have to provide for low income. So it would help address the different income levels we have here in the town that are not being addressed. Because every time you put something on the low-income housing, they have to go for state grants and state qualifications, and it slows the process down. So we're hoping by not having those requirements on it, it will expedite it faster.
What can the city do to speed up that process?
Well, we'll be advertising it and so forth. The staff will be putting the information together to make it known.
All right. The permitting process?
Well, again, it will depend on the developer, what the developer is proposing to put on there, you know, single family or multifamily housing and so forth.
All right.
We hope it will be multifamily.
Okay. Clint, you wanted to lean in here, and I've got a commercial break coming up here. It looked like you wanted to lean in on that one.
So you ask how the city can help with the permitting process and so forth. I think that you broached that topic. The council took one of my ideas and took it forth. We actually put together a task force, or we are putting together a task force from community leaders, community members within the building industry, within development industry, to come through and, you know, I'll say the bad word, they're going to scrutinize our development code. They're going to go through and they're going to try to hopefully point out some barriers from the public side, I mean, from the private side, that they feel are barriers to actually getting to that permit stage so they can actually start digging in the ground and start putting framing up. They're not going to change our code, but they're actually going to try to start pointing out certain parameters of our code that we can try to look at to maybe ease that process and make it a little more efficient, a little quicker. So we're looking at, again, we're looking at it from every different angle.
All right. Rick, back to you.
So when I'm talking with different developers, they find the biggest challenge many times is actually the building code, which we have no control over. And the planning code we can modify. But what I'm hearing from developers is the state and the federal building codes.
Correct. Yeah, and the task force that we got put together is they're going to be educated on that as during their process as well. Is because on one side between the public and private fence is the public. We are emboldened to not do things because the state has shackles on us, and so we're going to educate that. That task force is also going to educate the private industry in regards to the shackles that we actually do have to abide by.
Okay, Victoria's chomping at the bit to get in, but I've got to get this break in. We'll be right back.
At Abby's?
Welcome back. We're coming down to the wire here. I've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to try to spread that out as best I can. And I'm going to start with Victoria because she wasn't chomping at the bit. She was nodding enthusiastically at the last comment here. So, Victoria, what should people take away from today's program, and what do you want to hear from them before the business session tomorrow night from your constituents?
Well, I think that the council is dedicated to moving forward on most of these issues, and the disagreements that we have are not as large, maybe, as they seem, especially in social media. I want the public to know that we are on the public side. We are determined to solve the problems that are facing our community and to do it in the safest, quickest way for the community.
All right. Rick, and once again, we're looking for you for the next program, too, as a matter of fact. What should people take away from today's program?
I think it was very informative, just indicating the process that we have to go through, no matter what the subject is, but also that every counselor wants to hear from the public to know what their input is.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Mayor, what should we take away from today's program here?
Well, we want the public to understand that, as Victoria said, we are listening to them. Sometimes you do have to take your words as being measured words because we see the big picture and there is certain things that we are privy to because we're embroiled in this lawsuit. And so we have some attorney-client privilege that we can't broach. So there are certain things that we can't answer. And I, every time I say it, I apologize. I can't give you the full breadth of this answer, but we are working on stuff. I would encourage the public at this moment in time, reach out to your counselors, reach out to me. And I would also encourage all the counselors as well as myself to basically have an ear for the community. Just yesterday, I had a member of the community who walks up and down my street, and he saw me get in the mail, and we had a 45-minute conversation sitting on my porch with a cup of coffee.
That'll teach you to pick up the mail.
Exactly. So you know what? If you want the community to feel heard, then you need to hear the community. And I think we're definitely trying to do that. Myself, I'm out in the community. I'm asking questions. I'm talking with business leaders. I'm talking with just the average Joe Smo. So I encourage the council to do the same. And there will be a time in the near future where we can answer more questions in depth. At this moment in time, I'm absolutely nervous and leery to speak out of turn just to make sure that our opposing counsel doesn't use anything against me. But yeah, just hold on, have a little more patience. We are working towards a better community, and hopefully we'll get there sooner than later.
All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. We want to send out our thanks once again to our guest today, Mayor Clint Scherf, City Council President Victoria Marshall, and Senior Counselor Rick Riker. Thank you all very much for joining us. Stay tuned. More to come right here on KAJO Grants Pass.
The day.